Honorable members, Honorable De Villiers, Honorable Fava.
Good morning, ma'am.
Can we start with your meeting? I am ready. I'm just waiting for you to finish with your caucus, taking into consideration that for today we're having three items on the agenda. Without any waste of time, I just want to take this opportunity to welcome everybody. This is our first meeting in 2014 as the Clear Committee on Education and Recreation. Deputy Minister, as just an opening remark, you know, New Year's, sometimes new things happen. I think when we go through the briefing, one would also seek a clarity that maybe that changes, because according to the report, I see that it's like we're having two ministers in the department. So I think when we engage, we'll deal with those issues. I think why I'm raising this stuff is just a plea for our officials to take their work very seriously. When they come here and present, they must take their work very seriously. If in your annual report you can call a public document where you state the title of the deputy minister and say he's the minister, what does that say? These are the issues that really I'm going to request that. This is our first meeting, and I'm going to request that we take our work very seriously. Maybe, Deputy Minister, you're not even aware that in the annual report, you are the Minister of Arts and Culture. It might look very small, but you ask yourself, when you go through the report, what are other issues? On that note, I'm just going to request that we introduce ourselves so that we start right with the business of the day. Like I indicated, that we've got three items for today. Let me, I'll start with myself. Kenyan Mwenzi Makati, the chairperson of this select committee. I'm from the Northwest Province.
Good morning, my name is Vikin Mode, Gauteng Province. Luchani.
No more deaths, man, in Northwest Province. Compliment of the message.
Luchani, Miyageno Mucha. Ngumata, Lagavroto, representing Gumala.
Good morning, Michael De Villiers, representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, Willem Faber, and I'm representing the Northern Cape, and I'm not going to say Happy New Year because we're halfway there already. This is the New Year. Thanks.
Who's leading the delegation? I don't want the political heat, maybe from the...
Okay. I am leading the delegation. We're waiting for the 18th DG to join us, but in the meantime, I'll be the one leading the delegation. Thank you.
Over to you.
Well, thanks, Chair. Let me just indicate that
The minister was not able to come due to other commitments. As you know, it's quite a busy period, both in the government and also in other responsibilities. The DG is on his way to the AU in Addis Ababa with a particular matter which he's handling on behalf of the department, together with the chairperson of the commission, of the AU commission. So he's represented here by the acting DG. I'm told that she flew in this morning, but there's some accident on the way. She will be joining us. But in the meantime, we have Dr. Tiso, whom I'll ask to introduce the rest of the team from the department.
Thank you, GM. Good morning, honorable members. I will say compliments of the new year because it's my first time seeing you this year, so I think it's the right thing to do. As introduced by the GM, my name is Sakiwo Kiso. I'm with the Department of Arts and Culture. I'm responsible for monitoring, evaluation, governance, and also, and then also responsible for infrastructure development. Now, I'll ask my team members to introduce themselves on my left, starting from my right hand side.
Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable chairperson, honorable members, deputy minister, colleagues. My name is Louise Graham. I'm the Chief Director responsible for International Relations in the Department of Arts and Culture, and I will be doing the presentation on the African Charter. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Shema Adjani, PLO Minister's Office.
Good morning. My name is Mabeta Ralidi, PLO DG's Office.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Oregas Kassam, Office of the Deputy Minister, PLO.
Thank you, colleagues. As the DM has indicated, Chair, the acting DG will be joining us very soon. So over to you, Chair.
Can I request the presenter just to go straight to it?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Chair. Honourable members, colleagues, we have in front of us the presentation. The documents were distributed in advance. The presentation by the Department of Arts and Culture on the AU, the African Union Charter for African Cultural Renaissance. This is particularly a presentation being made in terms of constitutional requirements with regard to international agreements. Constitution, Section 231(2) determines that multilateral international agreements have to be submitted to Parliament for approval for ratification before the ratification process is undertaken. The content, very basically, the purpose of the presentation, we'll do a brief background. What is the strategic focus? The process that has been undertaken for ratification up until now, the implementation strategy for the charter which has already been developed, the quality control that was done by way of a small reference group, the involvement and consultations that has happened with other national departments, implications of ratification of the charter for South Africa and in the way forward, and the decision that is required from this committee. The purpose I've already spoken about, this is required by the Constitution that this committee deliberates on the recommendations and proposal from the department and expresses itself in terms of whether it would be appropriate for South Africa to ratify this particular international instrument. And secondly, as indicated, we already have developed an implementation strategy that would deal with the implications of the Charter for South Africa, and those are also on the table, and we would also appreciate your views on that. Then the background to the Charter, this is, as indicated, a multilateral treaty that is some way in the development. There were technical meetings and a draft document was developed, which was then presented to the African Union Conference of Ministers of Culture at their very first meeting held in December 2005. They recommended the Charter and it was subsequently adopted by the heads of state, the sixth ordinary session of the African Union Assembly that was held in Khartoum in 2006. Now, the Charter has a particular focus. It focuses on the role of culture not only in the political emancipation of the continent, but also the role of culture in development, both social and economic development. And it's focused on the fact that cultural exchanges contribute to mutual understanding and good relations between countries and between peoples. Currently, there are six members of the African Union that have already ratified, in other words, that have become full state parties and who are subject to the obligations of the Charter. And more than half of the continent's countries have already signed it, which is a political commitment that they will be initiating the ratification process in their countries. Like other multilateral instruments, the Charter does not replace any existing legislation or policies, but is complementary and supporting to national legislation and national policies. There are a number of very specific outcomes that are focused on by the Charter. It deals with culture, arts, and this is protection and promotion, cultural values, languages are listed out, heritage issues, and then also a focus on the creative industry. And all of these collectively, the message is that this contributes to sustainable development. And of course, the issue of sustainable development has already long been accepted as an integrated process that doesn't only focus on the economic aspects, but also the cultural aspects. So therefore, these outcomes that are listed in the Charter have the potential to have a significant impact on a number of different areas. The Charter already, as we said, and I'll come back to that, is aligned with major South African policy documents already. Some of the preparation processes that have been undertaken over the past 2 years to come to the point where we are. We've specifically responded to a call by the African Union heads of state and government, and that was in 2011. There was a special call made by the heads of state and government that countries on the continent should look at the signing and ratifying of this continental instrument. And there was also a very specific launch by the AU Commission, and a campaign was undertaken in 2011. Subsequently, South Africa responded to that. We signed the Charter in 2012 on Africa Day, and we started a process of consultative workshops countrywide with all different spheres of government, but also civil society, business, the private sector, and so forth, to bring on board everybody in terms of the objectives of the Charter. We developed a discussion document, a policy alignment document, which, as indicated, already showed very strong elements of policy alignment. We developed a booklet to popularize the Charter and translate it into Setswana and isiZulu, and that has been distributed. The reception was very good. Depending on if we have the financial resources, we would like to translate the booklet into further languages. There are some challenges that still remain in terms of synergy between policies and programs, and we'll mention those, and the draft implementation plan specifically looks at that. The implementation strategy takes into a consideration a number of specific issues. The fact that the Charter has obligations which are not only cultural, but also economic, social, and political, and therefore impact on other government mandates. The development of policy alignment document, we have identified gaps and areas of improvement. This all comes out in the implementation strategy. We have already looked in the white paper at how does our new arts and culture white paper also talk to the charter. And there are long-term interventions which have been advocated to ensure that in South Africa's sustainable development policies, the issue of the role of culture features quite prominently. And then, of course, we need specific forums to institutionalize the carrying forward of the charter obligations. The four areas and imperatives that I've mentioned, the economic, political, social, and cultural, we don't need to read all of them, but some of them I think we just maybe want to pick up because they also impact specifically on other government departments. The incentive measures is extremely important, both fiscal, legislative, and administrative. Then assistance to artists, not only funding, but I think the creation of an environment where artists can be creative. Extremely important. The issue of tax exemption in Africa, this is something which is constantly raised also by the artists. The issue of the protection of intellectual property rights, which is very current for us because, of course, the review of the South African intellectual property regime, which is still underway. The issue of African laws, inter-African laws and regulation is quite a strong focus on African countries supporting each other, learning from best practices and so forth. And then again also the issue of protection of copyright in Africa. Those are some of the key economic imperatives that comes out of the charter. Then some of the political ones, I think those are also very important. The ratification of the charter is not the last step. There is an urging that ratifications of charters, conventions, and other instruments that are relevant for us in this case is built in. The harmonization, very important, of national policies. In other words, the internalization of the conditions of the charter into the South African legislation and so on where necessary. The aspect of building capacity in the AU, which is an ongoing one, and I think this is also one of the commitments that we have in terms of our overall African agenda and foreign policy, so it aligns with our foreign policy objectives. Strengthening the ties with the African diaspora, of course, which is also, I think, a very strong commitment already on the South African side. Some of the social issues which are built into the charter, these are obligations. In other words, again, if we ratify, this becomes imperative that we give effect to that. The introduction of African cultural values and universal principles of human rights and education. So again, this is something that we will work with the Department of Education on. It's not something that we can do alone. Protection and promotion of the freedom of artists. Access to education and culture for all. Many of these principles will be very familiar because, as you know, they are already imperatives that we have in the South African environment. Equal access to women, recognizing cultural expressions of youth, recognition of the elders and traditional leaders, and then specialized training for creative artists, which is also, I think, for DAC, one of our key priorities, and of course you are aware of the fact of the work that has been done with Ilimbazi Golden Economy and specifically with Nafisa. The Skills Academy, which is really the passion of the Minister and the Deputy Minister in terms of establishing that Skills Academy for the arts. The extended use of, and then there's a quite strong focus on the issue of African languages into education, the use of African languages, the information and communication media and technologies which is available for us. We are being urged to utilize those to maximum potential. Those are all the social obligations. And then there's a very long list of cultural obligations. I'll just touch on some of the key ones there. You'll be aware that UNESCO has issued a general history, 7-volume general history of Africa. And we have been urged to use that in our curriculum, in our education, and to popularize that. As I mentioned, creation of an enabling environment for cultural innovation and for cultural expression. Protection of heritage, extremely important, whether it's tangible or intangible heritage. And of course, South Africa has quite a strong program there. We will also be working very closely with other departments because, as you know, the International Convention on the Protection of World Heritage falls within the mandate of the Department of Environmental Affairs. So we are working closely with them on that. the issue of the enhancing the environment for access and participation of all Ikota. This is one of the major strategic objectives of the department as well, access to information and culture. Training policies, again, refers to some of our initiatives that we've taken. Establishment of publishing and distribution houses. This is specifically listed out. The importance of books, reading, and so forth is highlighted. Enabling environment that will enhance creation of cultural worth. What kind of work are we doing there? Institutional frameworks that need to be developed regarding the issues around the state of heritage in Africa. And you're aware that the Department of Arts and Culture was the driver in terms of establishing the African World Heritage Fund, which is hosted by South Africa. It's an AU program. It's a Category 2 association, institution associated with UNESCO, so it has UN recognition. But it was established by South Africa, hosted by South Africa, and we are also driving the process of establishing and strengthening the fund. I think they had a target of, if I remember correctly, they had a target of $20 million that they wanted to accumulate and an endowment fund, and from what I heard, they are almost halfway there. And I think it's one of the success stories for the Department of Arts and Culture, and of course for South Africa. And they're doing excellent work, internationally recognized work on the continent, both in French-speaking Africa, English-speaking Africa, Spanish-speaking Africa, and they work closely with the AU, which has very recently received commitments from some of the major countries in Africa. Nigeria has finally made a substantial commitment to contribute financially to the endowment fund of the African World Heritage Fund. Then the issue that is a perpetual problem, pillaging and illicit trafficking of African cultural goods. There's a growing campaign around the return of stolen African heritage. The issues of preservation and maintenance of the repatriated goods, once it comes back to Africa, are we fully prepared and can we fully absorb what has been returned to us and maintain it at the international standard? And then, of course, the establishment of cultural research centers, and that's also something within the framework of Mzansi Golden Economy that we are working on, the cultural observatory. And it's in progress of being established that will give us the facts and figures and numbers in terms of not only the artists, the genres and so on, but also the contribution to GDP. And that is quite significant. But at the moment, those are guesstimates and they're not really fully based on national established statistics. In terms of the policy alignment of the charter, as indicated, we've already done a preliminary policy alignment exercise. There is strong alignment of the charter. Some of the imperatives that I've identified, as indicated, you recognise from things that are already captured in the South African approach. There are some challenges that remain in terms of ensuring synergy between the policies and programs. There's always, of course, a perpetual lack of funding for us, and also financial strategies and models. Limited research, a lack of institutions, and so forth, which hinder the full implementation of the charter. But there are significant areas of progress. We have a number of complementary strategies that have been adopted. Mzansi is one of them, the very strong social cohesion strategy in the Department of Arts and Culture, which has now been translated into a government outcome. And as from next year, we will have outcome 14 that will be social cohesion in terms of government program of action, and that is led by DAC, government-wide and nationwide. Then also, of course, the National Development Plan and the Industrial Growth Plan. And we have to have very close interaction with our economic colleagues and the colleagues leading the economic departments to ensure that the recognition and awareness is there of the role of culture, not only in development, but even in terms of calculating the benefits to the GDP and the country's economy. Then the review of the white paper, which has been a substantial exercise, has also given us an opportunity to look at the alignment of the charter with our overall cultural driving policy. And in terms of course, issues that are mentioned, indigenous languages and policy and legislation, it's also an issue which is very much on the agenda for arts and culture. In terms of the implementation plan, we're in the fortunate position that many of the provisions in the charter are already accommodated in our policies and strategies. There are a few gaps. We would need to be fully compliant. And the reason for that is that there is also an expectation of periodic reporting. In other words, you don't just ratify, become a state party, and that's the end of it. You are expected to be giving regular periodic feedback in terms of implementation, best practices, challenges, and so forth. So we are looking at a number of key interventions to internalize the charter and to strengthen our charter commitment. Some of them talk to cultural development through fiscal incentives. For arts and culture, this remains a perpetual problem, that there's not necessarily the recognition that substantive funding is needed in this particular sector. The funding for artists is, as you're aware, is a constant challenge. The issues of tax exemption, which is not even in terms of our own legislation fully accommodative of the needs of artists. The issue of inter-African laws and regulation, which we think we can take a stronger lead in and provide some guidance and some good thought and thinking around that. The full implementation of the social cohesion strategy, these are measures that we think we should be undertaken, and with a rollout of Outcome 14, I think that will in fact happen. The existing Pan-African platforms, there is a role for South Africa to step up even more than what we have done up until now to support those platforms. Of course, the ties with the African diaspora. I think the interlinkages between culture and the educational system, we do want to strengthen that as well. We have a very substantive program also under the Zanzi Golden Economy in terms of the placement of artists. And that program is running extremely well and has quite a significant impact already. And then, of course, the issue of a specific program for youth. I think that remains one of our major challenges. We have a dedicated unit for youth, and I think we can increase on that as well. A few others, supporting existing programs in education that provide professional tuition. Again, this will be addressed probably by Nakisa amongst others, the issue of tuition for artists. The use of all forms of the media, I think we're already doing good and we can do even better in terms of that, in terms of the promotion of the artists. Developing a language program, the issue around Swahili, there's a debate on the continent around the use of Swahili as a fourth official language in the AU. Promotion of the general history of Africa, the capacity of the cultural sector, building that, resourcing some of the forums that has been set up to deal with the illicit trafficking in African cultural property, the issue of archives and mechanisms to ensure that the return of archives to South Africa is adequately housed, conserved, preserved, and also access is provided to the public. Chief, I may just for a moment digress. We have a very interesting program. We've just signed, the Minister just signed on the 20th of December in Paris, a technical agreement with an institution in France for the digitization of the Rivonia trial dictabels. This is a huge thing for us. Those dictabels over the past couple of years have not been accessible because they are becoming quite old. The condition is becoming quite fragile, and we do not have the technology ourselves to digitize those old-fashioned dictabels that were used in court. In other words, the actual factual record of the Rivonia trial has not been accessible to the public over the past few years. But very soon, the French institution, we will be working with them. They will also subsequently be training our own people so that we can, because it's not only the Rivonia belts. We have about, the Rivonia belts number about 550. We have 50,000 dictabels that is a reflection of our legislative history that we do not have access to at the moment. So they will translate the first half, or the first 500 quads. They will assist in the training of our own people so that we can also digitize those files. So it's a project that we are very excited about. Then the Inter-Africa Cultural Cooperation, we are pursuing our bilateral cultural cooperation with the African countries. We already have cultural agreements, formal cultural agreements with more than half of the African countries, and we are pursuing the others as well. Of course, also at a multilateral level.
At the moment, I'm just going to request you to try to wrap up because
okay.
We've got two more issues to deal with.
Certainly, Honourable Chairperson. I think I'm almost at the end. And then, of course, the issue of the hosting of fees, and you know that that's a very big part of our work. Monitoring and evaluation mechanisms, I won't go into the details, but we intend to put them into place because it's extremely important that we have all those levels of interaction, so it will be amongst all the levels of government, also with provinces, and we'll dedicate a charter committee to continuously monitor the implementation of the charter. The reference group members I had referred to previously, so that quality control had been done. This is a list of the departments that we have consulted with. As we indicated, there are quite a number of them that have a direct impact on the implementation of the charter. And these are some of the implications. Financial, not at the moment. The ratification of the charter does not have a direct financial implication. But of course, as we develop programs and plans, we would have to look at that. Constitutionally, we are the culture obligations are consistent with the Constitution. There's a very specific provision made for vulnerable groups. And we have already consulted with the state law advisors in Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and in DIRCO in terms of the compliance with our other regulations. Way forward, once the process of ratification has been completed, we would like to launch the charter nationwide. We'll be starting the workshops and we'll be setting up the forums. We will, of course, have close collaboration with the African Union Commission to because that's an AU instrument. And then, of course, we have to start working on the progress report for the ministers and for cabinet. Recommendations from the department is that you note the content, that we would be happy to receive your comments, and if an agreement that you approve that South Africa may ratify this instrument. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. And my apologies for being a little long.
Chair, if I may, can I now introduce to the committee our Acting Director General, Ms. Monica Newton, and she will be facilitating the interactions from now onwards. Thank you.
Thank you. Acting DG, we welcome you to this meeting. You are welcome. Honorable Mushodi, you are welcome also to this meeting. Thank you. Honorable members, this is an opportunity for you to interact because this we separate this because this is a process on its own. After this, we have to adopt it. So I'm just going to give over to members to interact for clarity seeking questions or questions to the department.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the presenter of this presentation. She really showed some enthusiasm around it. Chairperson, this is very exciting about this charter. My first question is, I just want to know how far are the discussions as far as this Swahili as a fourth language, official language in the African Union? Within the African Union, how far are the discussions here? We would like to see it taking place. And the presentation has also raised some challenges that are remaining in the lack of appropriate funding and financing strategies. What measures is the department putting in place to address this particular challenge? And okay. On the charter obligations, it is mentioned that the cultural aspect pillar. It mentioned that is to organize cultural events such as festivals, symposiums, sporting events, and other exhibitions. That festivals also include music festivals. Okay. The under implementation strategy, it is mentioned that is to ensure commitment to the implementation of the charter through implementation forums at national and provincial government spheres. Okay, government spheres. Oh no, that one is here. I thought that I didn't understand that part. So far, let me stop there. Okay, the last literature is also under economy pillar on four imperatives. Measures for the protection of intellectual property rights related to the expression of cultural diversity. You know that this is a major problem also here in South Africa. You mentioned that this is underway. When does the department foresee completion of this particular problem?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this charter is one of the very best things which can happen, especially in the field of arts and culture and so on. So it's one of the best. Last year we as works visited America, and in America there were a lot of arts and culture, especially from Africa. And I was wondering, do they have the permission to keep those very useful and valuable items there? And that is the situation especially in Africa. Now when this chart is actually coming to working position, then I think the arts and culture and all those items will be ensured for the African people. That includes South Africa. Now my question to the Department of Arts and Culture is Honorable Chairperson. I know, and from the presentation I also received that information that not now there won't be any financial implications. But after this charter is actually adopted by all of the different countries, then the financial implications will come to the fore. Now, from your side as Arts and Culture Department here in the Republic of South Africa, are you already busy with some kind of planning to make sure then that when this charter is implemented, that we are ready and do have the funds to implement what actually are expected from us? If not, when are you going to start with that? That is the one. And then in the Arts and Culture Department, maybe there will be also a separate department inside. Separate committee. Who will handle this, because it will be very, very widespread. So we can't expect from a current committee to do that work, because there won't be enough hands to handle the work. Maybe we will then appoint more hands to do the work, or a different committee to do it. What is the situation in that connection? Thank you very much.
Honorable Zibilas, I think that one is a political question because it's within those committees and they're not the ones who are relevant for committees. But it's noted, it's okay, it's a notion.
Chairperson, it's not us. It's a different thing. What do you call it? Inside the department.
Unit, you know? Within the department of programs.
Yes.
Within the department.
That's the program, that's the word.
Thank,
thank
you.
You.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to know, I see on the implications, it's financial implications, it says no financial implications. I'd like the department to explain to me that there can be no financial implications, and if there are any financial implications on staff, etc., if they can tell us exactly how much that would be. And it says as well it will be affected departments if it develops 5-year plans in line with their MTEF cycling starting 2014. I'd like to know also how will they determine the success that they will then get through this, and how does the department also monitor progress to say if it's actually progressing. Thank you.
Let me list the financial implication and in implementation and everything with finance to the two members that have already asked it. Chair, on the background of the presentation, this is an international instrument. It says the charter does not replace any national cultural policies, but complements and strengthens the existing one. I'm not sure, Chair, if I will be in order when I ask, therefore, does that mean the cultural policies of every other country, whether it affects human rights, It because we are going to sign this international relation, we will also be part of that policy that is going to affect the human rights as per South African Bill of Rights that we have. And I don't know, am I correctly understood what I'm trying to ask? Because we've got a Bill of Rights in South Africa that is protecting the rights of people of South Africa. And we are going to join the international world in their policies and sign the maybe I don't have the understanding when a charter is signed or when an international instrument is signed. Maybe I don't have a clear knowledge on how it affects us as South Africans when we sign any policy charter of other countries or sign together with those countries. Maybe I need a more clarity on that. And also, you also said in your implementation plan, you will develop a mechanism that will ensure archives and other historical records are returned to South Africa. Will it be only the records that are on paper that will be returned, or does that include our own people that are in those countries, even if it's their remains that are in those countries, are they also going to be returned to South Africa? Does that include that, or that's a separate thing that will happen in a separate department or in a separate way? In this charter that we are going to sign, yesterday or the day before yesterday, I was listening to the news and I heard that, I was on my way. I heard that the Gauteng province is intending to take some of our African people to become, to help in policing in South Africa, as people that will be taken to the Department of Police and be policemen in South Africa. If the charter that is going to be signed has it recognized that, are those people going to be protected in a way by means of signing this international relation with these African countries? Thanks. And how is it how is that going to be handled?
Thank
you. Okay,
yeah, please.
Or you can say it in Tswana. I'm good in every language also. Chair, what I'm trying to say, to me, when you sign an agreement or you sign something with some other countries, it means you are entering into a relationship with that country. Now, what I'm trying to ask, even if it's not police, it's people that are working within the department or within South Africa, how is this thing going to affect them? The people that are coming from these countries, especially those that are being mentioned here, coming from these countries, how are they going to be affected? Maybe this is not going to affect them. This has nothing to do with them. That will be explained to me.
Before I give over to the presenter of the department, thank you, Honorable Rancho. You ask a question, then the department will respond. I think, actually, I want to start from the side of our constitution. If you take our constitution into consideration and check it against this charter, you say that there is no interference with the constitution, which is one of the requirements. Like our constitution is saying, everybody has a right to education, language, cultural beliefs, and all that. The presenter spoke about education, you know, the relationship between this department and your education department. I think also this question will also go when we deal with the annual report. But I want to check, because the emphasis on the curriculum, because currently what is happening with arts and culture, which covers your with arts and culture, you get arts and culture till grade 9. From grade 10, we don't have arts and culture. How do we ensure? Because if we talk about culture, I think it's something that has to be continued. What would be the influence, you know, your influence into the curriculum? Because this department, there should be that we know that there's this relationship. But my worry is that you, with arts and culture, you just go up to grade 9. What happens after grade 10? Because if we are serious about teaching our children culture, we have to take it even up to tertiary. One is more interested in that. But generally, when you look into the issues that are appearing in the charter here, that aligns to our constitution. But I'm just interested in that, your relation with basic education, to take it further. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Deputy Minister, I don't know if you want to weigh in on any of the issues. You're good. All right. Thank you very much. And again, to the Select Committee, my sincerest apologies for arriving late. I'm still learning about travel logistics to Cape Town, as it turns out. One flight is not a good idea. I also stand filling shoes far greater than my own, both physically and metaphorically, as I fill in for the DG on this occasion. I will hand over to my colleague, Ms. Louise Graham, to answer a lot of the technical questions that have been raised about the charter. But if you will permit me, Chairperson, I'll just essentially answer the question that you raised about education. Essentially, The department has a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Education because there is already an acceptance by the two departments that obviously our fates are intertwined. Having said that, arts education is a major focus of our activities through the Mzansi's Golden Economy program, where we're working with a program called Artists in Schools, where, for example, we are locating artists in schools to supplement that curriculum teaching which you've highlighted goes to a particular level. The good thing about the education system is that art is an elective subject in later years. The challenge is not at all schools. And that again creates a dynamic where it's essentially impossible for some very talented children to take these subjects because the schools in their area don't necessarily offer those. And of course we actually only have three schools of the arts. Two of them in Gauteng, one of them in the Western Cape. So there is a lot of discussion that needs to happen between ourselves and the Department of Education about arts curriculum at schools. The general history, however, speaks more to the delivery of the history of curriculum, which, if you'll recall, Professor Khada Asmal, when he was Minister of Education, was very, very passionate about. And, of course, the bigger question, as the Renaissance Charter says, is that there does need to be the delivery of a shared and generally understood history. And that's a conversation that does need to happen with the with those aspects of education which are not specifically arts and culture, but as which you've mentioned, Jeff, but to speak to our understanding about who we are and where we came from. So I hope that that answers your question. And I'll hand over to Louise to deal with some of the other issues.
Thank you, Acting DG, and thank you, Honourable Jefferson. I'll take some of them very specific. Some of them are very easy to answer. They're just as straightforward. The issue of Swahili in the AU is an ongoing debate. There are Pan-African language forums where we also participate, where the issue is on the agenda and it's being discussed. Strangely enough, not all African countries is in favor of that. Of course, there are other dominant languages in other parts of the continent which has been also being put forward, but it is an ongoing debate that we are participating in. The issue of the lack of funding and funding mechanisms and what we are doing about that, I think it is, again, it is an ongoing debate. How does arts and culture strengthen the national pool of funding that we receive from Treasury, and what supplementary measures that we have, do we have? There are a number. We have approached Treasury for specific funding, for example, for the Mzansi Golden Economy. We are talking to them about supplementary funding for social cohesion and our cultural diplomacy strategy, which is in a developmental phase. We will also, we plan to put a special bid to Treasury for finances for that. So it's an ongoing battle for the department, but there are very specific steps that we are taking to address that. The charter obligations, the cultural events and festivals that are mentioned, yes, music is very definitely also included in that. The implementation strategy will be rolled out nationally and provincially. I think that was the focus. And we're also planning to establish an interdepartmental committee, which I think also answers some of the other questions. So there will be a permanent interdepartmental committee to look at the implementation of the charter. The intellectual property rights, copyright and intellectual property is a mandate of the Department of Trade and Industry. But we serve on an interdepartmental committee being led by Trade and Industry, which is currently in the process of reviewing the entire South African copyright and intellectual property regime. The issue of the illicit trafficking in African cultural groups, the question asked by the Honourable Member of the Western Cape, this is a very, very big problem for us. And it's something which has a very long history. I mean, in terms of the colonial times, a huge amount of African heritage and African cultural objects were removed and are currently in museums and galleries all over the world, predominantly in the old world, if you will, in Europe and the Americas.
But it is a an ongoing issue. There are there is an international instrument. There's a Hague Convention that deals with the illicit trafficking and the illicit and the repatriation of cultural goods that we are also a state party to, and we participate in the international discourse at that level on the return of those goods. But it is an ongoing battle. I can tell you the European galleries and museums and so on are not particularly keen to return those goods. That also links to the question asked by the chairperson, I think, in terms of human remains or one of the other honourable members. The human remains are dealt with slightly differently, and it is more on a political level. There have been a number of engagements. You will know that we had the return of human remains. Sarah Bachmann was the first one from France, I think, in modern times, and the most visible and high profile. We're also engaging with the Austrians, we are engaging with the Australians, and so on. So that is happening at a diplomatic and a political level in terms of our engagements with those countries. The different level of funding, I think that was also a question from the Honourable Member of the Western Cape, the different levels of funding, some funding already exists. The department has already been engaged with the charter process for a number of years. So we have the resources, not very large, but we have the financial and the human resources to carry forward that process. And DAC will be leading the interdepartmental, but of course the other government departments would have to come on board with their commitments in terms of the programs that they have developed. The consultations has already happened with them. They are aware, and they are of the implications, the programs they have to establish, and also the funding that has to be attached to that. I do foresee that there may be a slight increase in the responsibilities of the department, but at the moment we can accommodate it within the provisions that has already been made. The question around the fact that there's no financial implications for the ratification, it simply means that it is a paper exercise. Once we have parliamentary approval, we engage with DIRCO, we engage with constitutional development, we draw up an instrument of ratification, a paper document, which will then be deposited with the African Union that is the depository for the ratification process. Then, of course, the charter still has to enter into force. It's not entered into force yet, so the obligations are not mandatory yet. Once the charter enters into force, the central controlling mechanism will remain the African Union in Addis Ababa, and then the financial implications will come in terms of programs, projects, and so forth that we would then have to give effect to, that we would have to implement to give effect to the obligations, all the things that we've spoken about. Again, staffing, not at the moment. How do we determine the success and how do we monitor the progress? Again, I think the Interdepartmental Committee will have a specific task to look at progress. And because we have to report, there will be a national consultative process as well, not only in terms of the implementation, but also in terms of the monitoring and report back so that we can report on that. The question around second last session of questions around the fact that the charter does not replace but strengthen national policy. Because the charter is a continental international treaty, it has to allow for the fact that the countries, their policies differ, their legislation differ and so on. So it is not prescriptive or obligatory in terms of establishing one standard or one set of policies. It allows for national policies to differ. So in other words, we will be prescribing to the general provisions of the charter, but not necessarily to the cultural policies of any other particular country. How does it affect human rights? We've done that study, and the provisions in the South African Constitution is actually stronger and more progressive than what has been written into the charter. We have already looked at that issue. The issue of the archives, I think the question was around archives and other cultural property and remains. I think we've answered that. And then the issue of the news, Honourable Chairperson, around the Gauteng police and protection of foreigners and so on. Of course, the charter does not talk about how countries define
the citizenry or the people who reside in their country, because again, for each country it is different. So the charter does not make any provisions and therefore would not be applicable in this case. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members.
I think let me share just to say, fundamentally, the charter is an instrument by the continent to facilitate alignment of our focus on cultural development, promotion of our culture, our history, languages, and cultural practices. When you look at it, you know, it's an attempt to say that, you know, this is a platform, and as a country, you know, we may have specific priorities, but in terms of and the programs, therefore, but in doing so, let's have a common platform through which we can cooperate and collaborate. So that from time to time, when countries then report, you know, they can use this as a point of departure to say, on this kind of area or languages, this is how far we are, and so on and so on, and make sure that they talk to each other. So I think that it doesn't threaten in any way the independence of the member states and the signatories and ratification of this
thank you, Deputy Minister, and thank you for the clarification on some of the issues that members have raised. Honorable members, we, after discussion and understood just particularly, I think, as members of this select committee, our interest was on that, the implications on our constitution, you know, but if you can check that it doesn't really affect, you know, our constitution, and it won't even affect the policies of our country. Honorable members, as because this has been tabled before the NA, now the procedure that is before the NCOP, we are expected to approve or disapprove this so that we... Honorable Father, I wish me, yes, that as this select committee, I think we are agreeing with this charter, African Union Charter for African Renaissance. Thank you. Honorable Members,
We do.
Oh, I second. Members, let me just read this report of the Select Committee. The Select Committee on Education and Recreation, having considered the African Union Charter for African Renaissance, referred to it, recommends that the House approve the said charter. Approved. Thank you. Honourable members, we are moving. We're going for our second item on the agenda. The annual report. Are you ready?
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will ask the acting DG, Ms. Monica Newton, to lead the team in presenting the annual report of the department. Monica.
Thank you very much, DM. And in
DG, when I raised my concern, you were not here. I think I must raise it again. I'm worried, but we are going to engage. This is the annual report of the department. I'll ask the question, do we have two ministers in this department? I think you'll respond to that.
because we've got Honorable Paul Mashisile, Minister of Department of Arts and Culture, and then we've got Dr. Joe Carter, Minister of the Department of Arts and Culture. I think those are the issues, because according to me, as the chairperson, it doesn't show any commitment and seriousness of the department. One wonders, by the issues, other issues that one has picked up in the annual report. I think you will clarify us, Minister. Till they clarify us, I'm going to address you as a minister.
Let me engage with the issue head on, Chairperson. There's one of two answers, one of which is that we are all equal under the sun, and the other, of course, is a more serious issue, which speaks to essentially an oversight in the quality assurance in the printing process. That was a gremlin that crept in. Obviously, Minister Paul Mashatile is the Minister of Arts and Culture, and Dr. Joe Patler is the Deputy Minister of Arts and Culture, and we apologize to the Selling Committee for that oversight. Chairperson, in keeping with the time, this is obviously quite a long presentation, and would you prefer it to be a half-hour presentation so that there's ample time for discussion? So I'll keep it. Thank you very much, Chairperson. So we'll keep the presentation. Members have had it in advance, but I'll touch on the major areas. In essence, the presentation matches the format of the annual report. We move through budget expenditure, explanations of classification of expenditure, a brief report on human resource management, touching base on the report of the Audit Committee, the report from the Auditor General, of course the all-important performance overview, and performance against key indicators. So the information here in this presentation very much matches that in the report. Essentially, we start with the financial aspects, which are the summary of the budget per program and economic classification. It will come as no surprise to the committee, who of course oversees our budget in the National Council of Provinces, that there is essentially a number of programs that comprise our department, and this expenditure report gives an indication of performance in terms of expenditure against those budgets. So administration, we spent 99.7%, and not to bore the members, but essentially spending patterns are on track. We've spent sort of between 95 and 100% in most budget items, and as a result, our under expenditure is actually very small for a program of this nature. Now, moving on to the next slide, where we start to explain the sort of categories or economic classifications rather than a programmatic structure. And you can see that based on this, what essentially we have spent 100% of compensation of employees, which essentially speaks to the personnel that we employ. Goods and services, again 99%. Our conditional grant, again this committee will be aware because we've been here talking to you about the library grant before. We've transferred 100% of those, we transferred money to our institutions. It is our capital works budget, which has essentially experienced some delays in payments, and as a result there's a bit of under expenditure there. And essentially non-profit organizations, which essentially the people who benefit directly from our funding systems, that received 100%. Households as well, so the non-profit organizations are organizations like Business Arts South Africa. The household budget, which is essentially how we support projects and programs, at 97.2%. Payments for capital assets and essentially thefts and losses, obviously much smaller. And the following slides begin to explain that in a bit more detail. In essence, our compensation of employees, we spent about 172 million on our employees as of 31 March 2013. which is an indication both of the scale of the department, but also as a percentage of our budget is actually reasonably small. In terms of goods and services, we spent 313 million, or 99.3% of our allocated budget as of the 31st of March 2013, which excludes payments for financial assets. Essentially, the savings in goods and services are because we delayed the advertising of a tender for the costing of a community library bill. That's being picked up in this current financial year, but essentially that delay in that tender and the awarding of the tender essentially caused the under-expenditure on the goods and services budget. In terms of households, this, as I explained, is where financial assistance is offered. There is always some confusion in committees with households. It's a treasury term, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we support individual households in the context of a census-style discussion, but for some reason, treasury thinks that this is a useful term for us to describe the inputs that we make into the art sector where we would support an event or a project or an individual through a bursary or anything of that nature. We spent 158 million or 97.2% of that budget as of 31 March. And the reasons for the under expenditure there is essentially there were three projects in the Mzansi Golden Economy project where we couldn't make the payments because of compliance documentation. Tax clearance certificates were not up to date, banking details were rejected by the larger BAS payment system that we use. All payments were submitted after the system closure. So obviously those payments have carried over into the new financial year and we've picked up those obligations, but at the time, in good conscience and in accordance with compliance, we could not make those payments. In terms of capital assets, this is essentially the work that we do in-house in the department to ensure that IT infrastructure and those kinds of aspects are fully functional. An amount of 5.3 million rand was spent, which is 76% of the budget. The reason for under-expenditure there is essentially the late delivery of invoices from suppliers who supplied us with servers and computers and those kinds of things that provide us with the tools of trade, essentially, in our work. In terms of capital works, this is the large budget, 475 million or 98.4% is being spent. The under expenditure is due to projects that were not implemented. For example, a project that we initiated with the National Film and Video Foundation to implement digital screens. They went through a fairly protracted process of working with their sector on this notion, and as it's transpired, the notion of just screens only is not really viable. They've come back to us with a proposal to do something far more comprehensive in terms of film production as well as exhibition. So there have been some delays in that program. In terms of our subsidies to non-profit institutions and agencies and our conditional grants, 100% of the budgets have been spent and transferred as of 31 March. In terms of the conditional grants, and this is very much the library grants, is as follows. As you can see, we've transferred 100%, but expenditure has been slightly less than 100%. In many cases above 70% and in some cases at 100%, but Limpopo province at 60%. And the slides that follow will take us through some of the reasons for variation. So, in the Eastern Cape, we transferred 78 million and 65 million was spent. New libraries in Lady Fransolo, the contractors were appointed late and so the funds have been committed but were not able to be expensed in the year under review. 7 out of 15 upgrades were completed and as a result, there's essentially been a bit of under expenditure as a result of that. 4 out of 14 modular libraries were delivered and 14.4 million is committed for delivery of the 7 remaining units while the service provider for 3 units is still to submit documentation to finalize appointment. So some practical issues causing delays here, but essentially the library grants, while delayed, are in fact being implemented in the Eastern Cape. In the Free State, pretty good expenditure, allocation of 50 million and 48 million actual expenditure. New library projects amounting to about 1.7 million not spent due to the delays in the appointment of contractors. obviously in these situations, as members are aware, provinces are follow supply chain management processes to appoint contractors, and the building of capital works projects is actually quite complex and very specialized, so there are sometimes delays in these kinds of processes. An amount of $2.5 million was not utilized on the upgrading of libraries, and that's essentially the under expenditure represented. In Limpopo, $68 million transferred, but only $49.7 million spent. In essence, $22 million surrendered because of challenges with implementation of those programs in the province. And there are discussions at multiple levels, specifically at MINMEC, relating to the implementation of these grants. And as the Select Committee is aware, we do make presentations to you as well.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Excuse me, Acting DG. In the slides, the acronyms, can you request that when you report, as you are speaking now, to tell us what is this NL or India? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Member, for pointing that out. Let me just go back. Where was the specific actor? Oh, sorry, my apologies. The National Film and Video Foundation, NFVF, and I'll follow that logic through as I go through the rest of the presentation. In Mpumalanga, $68.8 million transferred, and again, good expenditure, $66.9 million spent. Unspent funds have been committed to use for the completion of infrastructure projects. Contracts for two projects were terminated, and there were delays in appointing new contractors. In the Northern Cape, $72.3 million transferred, $62.6 million spent. The unspent amount has been committed for the completion of new libraries that are under construction, but obviously these funds have not been realized into actual construction projects as yet. In the Northwest, $64.9 million allocated and transferred, $62.9 million spent. The construction of five new libraries is currently underway. There have been delays in payments to contractors causing the under-expenditure. Furniture could not be procured for the year because of late awarding of the tender in March 2013, which obviously pushed us beyond the thresholds of the financial year that's being reported on at the moment. In Gauteng, just over 100% expenditure. And in essence, the department has allocated $1 million from the Extended Public Works Program as an over and above incentive, but only received $700,000. This was erroneously published as part of the Community Library Grant, so the expenditure report there is a little off, but essentially expenditure trends were good in Gauteng. In terms of the departmental agencies, 100% of the subsidies have been paid over to the various playhouses, heritage institutions, libraries, and the Pan South African Language Board. PANSAL, final appropriation of $69.4 million, and that was transferred in full. To the performing arts institutions, who are Artscape, the Market Theatre Foundation, Performing Arts Council of the Free State, the Playhouse Company, the State Theatre, the Windy Brow, and of course the two funding agencies, the National Arts Council and the National Film and Video Foundation, $364.4 million transferred in the year under review. Heritage institutions, a very long list of heritage institutions. I'm sure members have had an opportunity to go through them, but essentially these are institutions located all over the country, both from those that are being transformed from old infrastructure and also new infrastructure, such as the Nelson Mandela Museum, receiving in total $439.3 million from the department in the financial year under review. The libraries, the department is responsible for three libraries, the National Library of South Africa, the South African Library for the Blind, and a Community Libraries Grant, which essentially is allocated to the National Library of South Africa to facilitate the implementation of the Conditional Grant Program, $80.7 million transferred to the libraries. Non-profit institutions, these are essentially our associated institutions, again, 100% of funding has been provided to Business Arts South Africa, Engelenburg House, and Blind SA, $12.8 million in total to these organizations. In terms of households, these are essentially the programs and projects that are largely reported on in the performance aspects of the report, but per program, In terms of the promotion of performing arts, 69.1 million spent, the National Language Service, 9.8 million spent, the Cultural Development Program, 71.5 million spent. This is very much where the Mzansi's Golden Economy Program finds a home as well. Promotion of Heritage, 11 million. The National Archives Service, 463,000, and service benefits, 209,000, leading to expenditure at about 99.5%. And as I've already explained, the under expenditure because of the non-compliance with some of our beneficiaries delaying payments. In terms of capital transfers, essentially the department through its CapEx budget supports the maintenance and development of infrastructure at our playhouses, the Performing Arts Institution. In total, 137.1 million transferred to these organizations. For those of you who may have been to the Market Theatre recently, you'll see significant progress in upgrading of that facility. This is how this money is being utilized to ensure that our national theatres really do occupy that position of excellence in the arts. In terms of heritage institutions, also major transfers, 58.2 million for upgrading of Robben Island Museum, Nelson Mandela Museums, Iziko Museums of Cape Town, De Song Museums, the War Museum of the Boer Republic, Freedom Park, KwaZulu-Natal Museum, and the National Museum of Bloemfontein. The libraries, 2.9 million that went to the National Library of South Africa, again to ensure that the facilities are maintained and upgraded to the standard that are accepted at things like national libraries. Capital Works, it's a very large budget. Final appropriation of 280 million. We spent 277 million. That's the Capital Works of Heritage Institutions and the Capital Works of Libraries. Also beginning to look here at some of the new Capital Works programs, such as the new legacy projects that are being rolled out. In terms of our human resource management report, we have a vacancy rate of 9.5%, and essentially this is below our targeted threshold of 10%, which is in fact the generally held acceptable benchmark across the public service, so we filled 90.4% of our posts. In terms of the programs, the little bar chart indicates that the highest levels of vacancies is in fact in the performing arts program, followed by administration and the National Archives, with sort of smaller vacancy rates maintained in heritage promotion in the National Language Service. Reasons for service terminations, again this is part of the standard reporting required by Treasury. We had two people who passed away, resignations, expiry of contracts, transfers to other departments, which obviously happens quite a bit in the government families. We do tend to move around a bit as we move between national and provincial spheres. One dismissal for misconduct and a couple of retirements. In terms of the annual staff turnover rate, it's 4.8%, which is within acceptable bounds. In terms of further human resource information, of interest to the committee, gender representativity, you can see the bar chart at the bottom indicates that there are far more women employed in the department than men. However, at senior management level, we are slightly below target in relation to that, and we'll report on that a bit more as we move into the performance aspects of the department. So it is a very representative structure, but there is substantive focus by our HR unit in ensuring that we meet that target of the public service with regard to women at senior management level. In terms of training interventions, the lion's share of training interventions have gone to professionals in the department, followed by technicians and associated personnel. Managers also receiving a fair amount of training in the year under review, followed by elementary occupations and clerks. Again, this is just our way of being accountable to public structures about our obligations to train, but also to ensure that the accountability structures such as yourselves can see where the weight of the training aligns, which is with our professionals who essentially are the people who make the department work. In terms of the report of the Audit Committee, this is a standalone item in the annual report itself. Our Audit Committee has considered the annual financial statements and obviously the outcome of the audit as well and prepared their report accordingly. In the view, the department had in place a fully effective internal audit function in line with legislation and an audit committee itself in line with legislation. The audit committee operated in accordance with its approved committee charter adopted and its formal terms of reference. It comprised 5 members during the year and held 6 meetings. The committee fulfilled its oversight responsibilities through these meetings and assisted the accounting officer to ensure that there is an effective, efficient and transparent system of financial risk management, governance and internal control. And essentially the roles of risk committees are established in legislation. They assist in governance, they assist in quality assurance, they review performance information, financial reporting, and of course are critical to the quality assurance process of our annual financial statements. In terms of the effectiveness of controls, the audit committee highlighted the fact that the internal controls were not fully effective, highlighting some concerns, the lack of adequate policies and procedures in general, non-compliance to policies and procedures, lack of adequate supply chain management policies, contract and record management, inadequate capacity and turnaround, specifically noting the filling of the CFO position and performance on predetermined objectives, in some respects echoing the report of the Auditor General. In terms of the quality of in-year monitoring, the committee is satisfied with the extent to which there is adequate reporting and has noted improvements specifically in asset management and the formulation of predetermined objectives. In terms of the evaluation of financial statements, the report of the Audit Committee highlights that these audited financial statements were reviewed and the Audit Committee is in agreement with the conclusion thereof. In terms of internal audit, the committee is generally satisfied with the state of internal audit and has consistently reminded management, despite the fact that these systems are in place, that there does need to be improved control and governance and, of course, compliance to appropriate legislation, policy, and procedures. In terms of the Auditor General's report, essentially, the opinion is unqualified, again for the department, which is a significant feather in our cap. However, as is always the case with the AG, maintaining this record is something that they are concerned about, and so they always are at pains to point out areas where there is significant room for improvement. With performance information, as you will see in the performance report, not all planned targets were achieved. However, the report notes that there was some improvement from the previous year. Unfortunately, during the process, material adjustments to the annual performance report had to be made. Procurement and contract management system were inadequate. Human resource management and compensation inadequate. Inadequate systems to prevent irregular expenditure and poor controls in the SEM environment, very much echoing the report of the Audit Committee. In terms of unauthorized expenditure, again for the committee, this is essentially expenditure that should not take place because it's not in accordance with particular rules. 41.7 million. This is a cumulative total that refers back to the previous financial year 2011-2012 and the current financial year 2012-2013. And essentially the bulk of this relates to an SIU investigation which required the classification of the funds as unauthorized. With regard to irregular expenditure, this is where proper procedure was not followed. Again, 64 million, dating back cumulative 2010, some significant areas of process not being followed. 2011, similar processes not being followed. And in 2012-2013, aspects of it echoed, but considerably less expenditure, but leading to a fairly large total of 97 million in terms of unauthorized and irregular expenditure. With regard to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, in 2011-2012, essentially incorrect back payments and those kinds of issues were leading to what the public service deems as money that should not have been spent and could have been avoided by efficient action. In terms of 2012-2013, the year under review, breach of contract with a service provider and failure to defend the court case relating to interest. Service was requested on 2 service providers at the same time, which was due to a lack of communication, and unfortunately that caused fruitless expenditure. An event was cancelled, unfortunately, due to events beyond our control relating to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Remuneration of services not rendered. Incorrect notch being advertised, and payment to a supplier with interest, which was not, which should not have been rendered due to the cancellation of a contract. Some of this expenditure has been condoned as per the policy that prevails in the department, but $2.7 million in fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the year under review. In terms of the performance, essentially, just to contextualize this slide, the National Treasury has an approach to performance information which is a pregnant or not pregnant, dead or not dead approach. They do not allow for reporting specifically on areas where progress has been made but the target has not been achieved to 100%. So the information that the committee sees here is in absolute terms. It's either achieved or it's not achieved based on the stipulated target, which is not to say that there hasn't been progress through the year in achieving that target. So we achieved 55% of our targets in total and did not achieve 45%, which is not to say that there was no progress on those targets. It is a slightly better picture from last year, as was highlighted. However, it's obviously in terms of the numbers of indicators which also change year on year, and so that's how the picture also changes. The 45% of targets that were not achieved fall into two categories. In some cases, there was failure to perform substantially against targets. However, in some cases where substantial work has been done, we've been unable to produce the evidence relating to some questions from the auditors as to whether or not we could prove this performance. So, moving on to Program 1 administration, and I'll move through this quite quickly, but in terms of expenditure on approved budget and the vacancy rate, we've achieved very well. The numbers of females employed at 41.5%, so we really are just off that magical 50% number, but in some respects only three SMS posts were filled in the year under review, so there were some delays in filling other posts. We received an unqualified audit opinion, again a major target for us, and we spent 98% of our capital works budget, not 100% as projected. In terms of persons with disabilities employed, again, we're just off the target there. We've achieved 1.6% employment, but owing to the limited number of posts filled, we've not achieved that 2% target. In terms of the percentage of our social cohesion strategy implemented, we aim to have the social cohesion strategy, and in fact, this was done. We aim to have 20 Imbizo, or is Imbizo. Unfortunately, we had 9, but there was some confusion about what actually constitutes an is Imbizo, because there's not really a predetermined classification, and we've obviously improved on that in the years going forward. The numbers of media and briefings and interviews, we aim to have 16, but we've in fact had 21, because there were opportunities around major projects that provided us with more opportunities to speak with the media. In terms of the program Performing Arts, the programs implemented in collaboration with the Department of Basic Education, giving effect to our MOU, we aim to implement 3, but only 2 of them were implemented, the South African Schools Call at Stedford and the Curriculum Assessment Policy Statement. One project could not be implemented because of essentially a lack of resources in that regard. The number of art practitioners, facilitators placed in schools, we aim to place 200, unfortunately 75 were placed in the Northwest in Mpumalanga and Limpopo doing sterling work, but budgets allocated for this program really were complex and challenging, so we were unable to meet that target. In terms of the numbers of cultural programs supported in precincts, we aim to support 2, but in fact supported 8. Freedom Day, Africa Day, Mandela Day, Women's Day, Heritage Day, the BRICS Summit, AFCON, and Human Rights Day. In terms of the numbers of programs targeting vulnerable groups, this being women, children, people with disability, we targeted 7 programs and we undertook 16 programs, so significant achievements there, including the Youth Month program, the My History Educational Tour, a Youth Imbizo at Deep Stuart, and Women's Month programs. And in terms of the functional councils in art institutions, we aim to have 8 and we successfully have 8 functional art institutions in the period under review. In terms of the National Language Service, the committee will be well aware that the legislative processes for promulgating the South African Language Practitioners Council Act were initiated. This was obviously pending submission to legislative structures. So, in essence, the state law advisors gave us the Section 75 certification, and the certification, in fact, as the committee is well aware, happened this year. the number of bursaries offered to undergraduate and graduate students. We planned on 140, but instead awarded 555. In essence, this was very much due to the role that UNISA played in its lower fees, but also higher registrations in the second semester. So very impressive performance there. In terms of the numbers of domains developed, this speaks to our terminological service. We developed 29,860 terminologies in 5 domains. This is consistent work that the National Language Service does to ensure that language remains current, that new words are incorporated on a daily basis to ensure that languages remain active and can effectively describe the situation that people experience themselves so that they can communicate about it. The numbers of language forms, we aim to have 1, but in fact had 2, and this was very much because of the ongoing policy and legislative work which required more forums than would ordinarily be the case. In terms of creating a functional virtual national center for human language technologies, we aim to develop multilingual text resources and in essence achieved that target. Final text resources have been delivered, and in terms of our service provider in that regard, we're very pleased with the progress. The establishment of a resource management agency. The resource management agency was successfully set up as both a physical and a virtual presence and was launched in November. And the Human Language Technologies catalog is now available on this website, ensuring that terminological services, lexicographical services around the country have access to this kind of information. In terms of the cultural development program, we aim to establish a number of sectoral bodies and to support them in design. We aim to have an approved business plan and strategy for the establishment of a national council in design. However, further consultation was required. So while work was ongoing there, conversations were ongoing, we needed to update some research, which we didn't have the budget for at the time. We aim to establish the institutional and legal framework for NACISA. The business case and the business plan and the implementation framework were developed towards establishing the legal entity. However, the National Treasury towards the end of the year of review, because of slow spending, essentially scooped a portion of the NGE budget and made those funds unavailable to the department, and as such, progress on the NACISA project was quite badly affected. My apologies. Thank you, Deputy Chairperson, Deputy Minister. The NACISA is the National Academy for the Creative Industries, which essentially is a flagship program in the Mzansi's Golden Economy program to create a dedicated and specialized institute to promote excellence in the arts. It will in fact be a specific institution on its own, and there's a huge amount of work ongoing on the scoping and development of that institution. The number of cultural industry sector policy briefs and frameworks developed. We aim to have an approved design policy framework. While consultations were held, we couldn't necessarily finalize that strategy because there was a request for additional research to be done. The number of cultural events and exhibits and markets that we participated in nationally and internationally, we aim to participate in 16. 16 events were held, some of them in collaboration with the Department of International Relations, including the Ifeletu Art Exhibition, a craft exhibition, an art exhibition with SADC countries, the London Olympics and Paralympics, and of course the Joy Jazz Festival. There were a number of partnerships supported and utilized in the cultural industries, including National Book Week, which was held in all provinces last year. 2 issues of Baobab magazine were published, and the Time of the Writer Literary Festival, which is essentially part of the the Time of the Writer and the South African Literary Awards were held in the year under review, so successful achievement of those targets. With regard to our international relations portfolio, in terms of the Charter for African Renaissance, Louise has just been talking about that. We aim to hold national consultations with stakeholders, and in fact, those consultations and workshops were held, and the committee saw the outcome of those processes at the meeting earlier this morning. In terms of the number of trilateral partnership programs implemented, we aim to develop a 2-year India, Brazil, and South Africa which is essentially the almost alternative to BRICS. It's a separate structure. We aimed to have that program. However, we could not have the program because the Ministerial and Experts Conference did not take place. India did not confirm its availability, and obviously it's an agreement between three parties, so in order for the discussions to take place, all three parties must be there. We aim to sign a trilateral partnership with Mali, Tunisia, and South Africa. Unfortunately, the partnership did not come to fruition as planned, mainly because of the ongoing political conflict in Mali, which was quite profound in the year under review. In terms of developing policy briefs and frameworks, we aim to develop and implement a detailed post-conflict reconstruction and development program with the DRC, Angola, and Sudan. This was developed, and the implementation and rollout will take place in the new financial year, which at this point would have been 2013-2014. There was a bit of a delay, however. It was signed, it was expected to be signed earlier in the year and was signed later in the year. In terms of our Department of Arts and Culture Overseas Direct Assistance and Resourcing Policy, we aim to identify two South African projects to obtain overseas direct assistance, and two projects were in fact identified and funded through UNESCO and the European Union. In terms of heritage promotion, again, one of our very large programs, we aim to develop a number of policies and instruments. The Living Heritage Policy, we aim to have costed and approved. It was costed but not approved, and in fact was presented in this current financial year. The Underwater Cultural Heritage Policy was also costed but not approved, and essentially this is part of the process before it's submitted to Cabinet. The National Museums Policy we aim to finalize. The research document has been completed, but it still needs to be consolidated into a draft policy. Essentially, resources there unfortunately needed to be prioritized to the repatriation of the remains of Klaas and Troy Pienaar, as was highlighted by my colleague a little earlier, which allowed for the dignified repatriation and reburial of Mr. and Mrs. Pienaar. The Human Remains Policy developed and approved. A draft discussion document has been developed, but unfortunately this was also put on hold because of the enormous attention and the amount of resources required for the repatriation of the Pienaars. In terms of the number of heritage institutions established, we aim to have the site for the construction of the Sarah Bartman Center of Memory cleared. The site clearance was received and a report on that basis was received. All working drawings have been approved, final bills of quantities have been calculated, and essentially at the time of writing what needed to happen was the submission of the bill and bill of quantities and approval thereof. The completion of the construction of the Matola Raid Memorial and the official opening, the construction was completed, however a completion certificate had not yet been issued at the time of drafting of the report, so we couldn't essentially announce that the project was fully completed. Phase 2 of the Jail Dube Master Plan completed. The Master Plan was reprioritized and elements were approved, but unfortunately the delay of the house, Jail Dube House, was delayed, which delayed the implementation of Phase 2 construction. Essentially, in the purchasing of sites, we often run into problems around environmental impact assessments, delays in transfer, which of course delay construction processes. We aimed to construct and unveil the Bambata statue. We did create a model, a maquette, of the statue. However, we were not particularly happy with that process, and so a panel needed to be appointed to give us some advice as to how to proceed. We aim to have 30% of the Khoisan heritage routes completed. A baseline study was completed and 15 nodes and sites proposed throughout the country. So in essence, the finalization of the baseline study took longer than envisaged, and the rollout will now be determined by the recommendations of the study. The construction and completion and official opening normal, phase 2 was completed, and the official opening unfortunately was postponed, but the construction was completed. In terms of the OR Tambo homestead, we aim to have renovation and construction completed there. Only one of the two houses was completed in the OR Tambo homestead complex. The renovations took longer than anticipated, which delayed the official opening. With regard to our programs of developing geographic names, the number of government gazettes, we aim to have 4, so there was no variance there, and always released with much fanfare and some controversy. The work of the geographical names process is always a very vibrant part of the department's annual program. We aim to award 66 bursaries. We in fact awarded 106 bursaries. In essence, this was because of lower fees that were being requested by students, which allowed us to scale up the number of departmental bursaries. Unfortunately, we aim to install 3,000 national flags and flagpoles installed at school. We installed 108. There were some delays in the appointment of a service provider, but that program has received a significant attention in the year under review, and there's been major progress there. We aim to distribute 300,000 handheld flags. We distributed 164,000. The demand for these flags is on the decline because we're essentially in competition with vendors who are selling them. So we need to think of a new way of profiling the national flag in this way. The number of annual heritage and historic days held, we aim to have the Freedom Day celebrations and the Mandela Day celebrations, and those were successfully held on both occasions on the days designated as such. In terms of the national awards, we aim to host one national awards order ceremony. 2 national awards ceremonies were in fact co-hosted in the period under review, mainly due to a special request for an additional ceremony which coincided with the O.R. Tambo lecture during the centenary celebrations. In terms of the National Archives and Library Service Program, we obviously do a significant amount of work in the ongoing preservation and collection of archival material. We aim to collect 1,500 sound collections, and we in fact did more than that, 1,555. Additional hours were dedicated to this program. We aimed to inventory 4,000 video collections, and in fact more than that were done. An intern was trained to assist with it, so it helped with the process. We aimed to inventory 800 film reel collections and 842, again, overachievement there. And in terms of the National Film and Video South Africa, National Film and Video Archives of South Africa Museum Collection, we aimed to collect and archive 100 objects, and in fact 59 objects were collected and researched. And essentially, the terms of reference for the project didn't include sort of capital works aspects like shelves, and we couldn't really do the work as planned. We purchased a significant number of library items, but unfortunately below target. We aimed to do 525,000. Due to slow procurement processes, unfortunately, 335,000 items were purchased. With regard to technical infrastructure to support access to information, we aim to support 15 new libraries, but in this case 14 new libraries were built. The termination of non-performing contractors essentially led to this, and this very much speaks to the report on the implementation of the conditional grant. We aim to upgrade 50 existing library structures, but 36 of them were completed. And again, some of the challenges that we experienced: termination of non-performing contractors, but also the fact that local government, where this work is very much done, and national government have different financial years. So the reporting cycles sometimes clash, and this is very much a contributing factor here. We aim to conclude 2 oral history projects, and in fact, we undertook 3. Training projects on oral history were undertaken in the Free State and Northwest, and the Prince Africa Zulu project started in February of that year. In terms of interventions we've made in response to the audit committee's concerns and, of course, the outcome of the audit report, we're strengthening supply chain management capacity and structures. Payments and procurement have been centralized so that there's direct control over it. In critical areas, we finalize what are called omnibus procurement services. So these are essentially body shops of service providers who can do a range of things, especially in the events management environment. Governance structures have been centralized, and there are interventions on the planning and delivery of infrastructure because this is a major concern. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for your time.
Thank you, Acting DC. You speak to your time. I will now open up for questions
I just want to make one comment on this annual report. The annual report is from April 2012 to April 2013, and I had a question on the rabbit. It's just a pity that I will ask it next year maybe, and that will be overdue. It won't be, and we are going on election in a few months to come. I might not be part of this collective, and I'm worried because I'm really worried about the rabbit in the year of Comrade Nelson Mandela. And to me, it doesn't sound good. And the apology that I read in the newspaper is not satisfying it's not satisfying me as a South African. And Chair, I will now open for members to ask questions. Members, we said this presentation, discussion and everything, and the response from the department is 1 hour, 30 minutes. And our 30 minutes will end at 12:30. It's 11:45 now, 10:45. Let's ask questions as much as we can, and the department will respond as much as it can. Honorable Mube, Honorable De Villiers, Honorable Faba, Honorable Hasmeni, and Honorable Chairperson of the committee, Honorable Mushodi. Can we, members, can we give the chairperson a space so that she asks her question? She is going to leave us. She's going to her province for a presentation of the bills that are in front of the NCOP.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when the acting DG was talking about this national flag, something just came into my mind that maybe if I can just ask a simple question, that from 2009 up to date, how many flags have been handed out to schools? Because this 3,000...
Sorry, Chairperson. Honourable members, can we give the Chairperson a space? Can we give a person who's on the floor a space to talk? Because we will not be able to listen to her and listen to other people.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think that I should raise this stuff. That whenever we talk about flag, I think as you just raised before, I come to my question. That from 2009, I remember in the annual report it was 3,000, which was not achieved. Every annual financial year is that 3,000. This current financial year that we're dealing with in the report is that 3,000 and only 109 is achieved. Can the department be honest with us actually what is happening? Because there's no move. We just have to accept that there is literally no move. I think acting DG will deal with that, but I felt that when you raise it, I felt that if it was me, I wouldn't have put it here, because it says that as a department, this is one mandate that we cannot, and I don't know what are the reasons for that. Acting DG, you indicated with my presentation that the performance for this financial year is 55. This is what we have achieved. But from the previous year, it was 58. I'm more interested because the previous financial year, the department achieved 58%. This current financial year, you have achieved 55%. Does it mean that the department is regressing? Or is there any improvement? On the annual report, again, under the human resource information, you know, your classification is different.
when you go to the annual report, there's a column that talks about Asia. Colored, Indian, Asian, blacks, and all that. Here in your presentation, who are these Asians? How do we, maybe I should be, this, because my understanding, this summary is from your annual report. Do we still have that category? Maybe we are still in the past as this department. I don't want to say that, but maybe. On page 59, Acting DG, you talked about the target.
Is it 59?
Slide 59.
Yeah, slide 59. Number of us practitioners, your target was 200. You managed to achieve 75. I know, because when you talk about a target, already it talks to the budget. Was that 200 not budgeted for? Slide number 60, where we talk about this program. You know, one thing that one has realized is that we tend to have those activities, the once-off activities, which, you know, I think for this year committee, what is important for us is the legacy. You come there, you have in diesel, what happens next? Can't we think of changing, you know, these programs the way we are doing them? Instead of just calling people to one stadium, doing this, but to you know, they'll come tomorrow, that nothing. Can't we think of something that at least we can have something that is sustainable, that's something that people will be sure as this department that at least our people at least got information. Around the issue of the vacancy, on the annual report, it indicates that you have 3 vacancies for the DDG. The updated report, it indicates that you have filled 1, meaning that you are still left with 2. When are you going to fill this? Because it's very crucial. Lastly, the issue of the CFO. When are we going to see this department having a CFO?
Thank you. I want to have more, but thank you all over the room.
Now, thanks, Acting Chair. Thanks, Deputy Minister and the Acting DG. I'll start with the consent that only one member is having a hard copy. We all don't have a hard copy. I don't know who has to be blamed. So the secretary has to give us it has to email us, and some of us believe in reading on the hard copy, mark where you want to ask the questions. So I want to make a huge and a concern, because we always have this thing of not being taken as they could, as a stakeholder, another house of parliament. So I'm not sure whether it is linking with that thing, but you don't necessarily take us as one of the parliament, house of parliament. Maybe let me start with the last question on the CFO. To say the report for audit committee and the report of the auditor general raises many issues on compliance, on non-compliance. Even if we didn't have a permanent CFO, but there is a person that has been performing this function. And in terms of the this Financial Management Act, PFMA, in full, what do you call it? But you understand what I'm saying. In terms of the PFMA, there are measures that have to be taken by, I don't know whether it's the ministry or the DG, or if the DG has done this to say what are the measures. They even indicate, the PFMA indicates to say for a percentage of whether 5% or so, then the CFO, the accounting officer, has to face some measures, disciplinary measures. So what I would ask, do you have performance appraisers? That's one. Two, have you, maybe it's a question of the skills development. So whoever is being tasked to deal with finances, maybe, what are the real problems? Because the question of supporting documents, the question of a service provider being appointed, but the service provider not having a tax clearance. That's a thing that one, even if you have not read, I'm not an accountant, those are soft issues. A service provider appointed without quotations in the report. So where lies the problem? What are the measures that you're putting in place? In terms of these other measures. The other one, on those measures, did that person get a bonus after all these negative issues that are related to his or her job description? Also, maybe on the internal audit committee, does the internal audit committee do quarterly reports to raise red flags to whichever unit or branch, so that it's not at the annual report where all these things are being picked up? So does he or she use any periodic interventions in terms of raising these things and following up to see whether these things are being improved or not? On the breach of contract, I mean fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and the PFMA says if you do that, it's related, it was supposed to be avoided. So what makes the expenditure should be fruitless? I mean, all those are measures that the person given the responsibility of being a CFO, whether you are acting position or whatever, these are the things that one has to do in terms of where the quotation, if you sign there, you sign knowing exactly which these things have been followed up. And then for the irregular, with 97 million, and we have also 64 million, it goes there to say, this is a huge money. What are the measures that have been put in place that it does not recur in future? Lastly, academy. The skills academy, the ministry has been indicating this, build the skills academy. Can we get some progress in terms of how far is it? And lastly, I've heard the grant on community libraries. This is a constituency issue that the minister visited our constituency and promised to build a library there. We are now campaigning. People, the community there, they say, where is our library? Can we get to say, is this money that has been underspent because of contracts
does my area issues, Freedom Park, also fall under that little rollover, so that I will tell them that no, come the next administration, we are going to get it, but we are going to do something, whatever. Can I get the program so that I don't ask you outside? When they read this, my questions, you must know that I have raised it in a formal meeting. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Nobel, Honorable Julius.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think my questions will probably be very short. And my question is actually concentrating on the negative side of the department. And I'm sorry that I'm concentrating on that side. But I must put my emphasis there. 2011-12.
Sorry, but you know that there are positive sides in the department.
I know, yeah, I know. That's why you are here. You must concentrate on the positive side. Let me just start. It is always very difficult to work with money of the state, especially when there's other people who you are depending on to deliver the work. That's very difficult. But if you can do it yourself, it's easy. But when you put the money to provinces or to municipalities or to somebody else as a contractor, it is very difficult. That I must understand. And that we understand. Please take cognizance of that situation. And that is not why I'm actually now concentrating on the negative side. I do recognize also the positive. Now, in relation to the 2011 and 2012-13 irregular expenditures, the department is actually going backwards. And that is a very huge concern. And I think you also imagine that and understand that. We must get out of that situation this year, coming year. We must. I won't be here. I'm sure I won't be here. The others, I won't be here because I did not nominate me to Parliament again. So I'm sure.
Honorable civilians, through you, Chairperson, I think it's not about you being here, but it's about the department because
yes.
You still be here.
Yes.
They should be doing what they're supposed to do.
And actually also the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That is also a very huge concern. You must actually concentrate very hard to have or maybe erase the situation. You can. I know you can. And you will. So it's just putting more emphasis on that. Then the other one, Honorable Chairperson, the 45%, and I'm actually connect to the question put by my colleague, Honorable Newden. The department must be able to identify
very early in the year, during the year, where is the problem? And not at the end of the year, becoming to that time, and then in the report we hear that
we find out that there's 45% targets not reached. That is very, very negative not only for the department, but for government. Because one of the departments of government is now actually not delivering. And that we as politicians, we don't like it. So, can you just elaborate on that? Do you have the systems in place to actually detect very early where the problems in not delivering on the targets? And then the other one is in connection with women, the female. This situation comes a very long time in a department. Now, near the end of this term, we still hear that you are struggling to appoint women. Now, what is the problem? Why can't you go out, headhunt women out there and get them to this department and appoint them? What is the problem? Can you just give us that information? What is the problem within the department. And then the other one, I usually here, as I was during the December holidays here at Waterfront. Now, people, I heard them talking about the ferry from Waterfront to Robben Island and the previous time and so on and so on. What is the situation now on the repair and maintenance of those ferries? If it's not your responsibilities, then you can just inform us. And then the other one, the last one, Honorable Chairperson, is, maybe that was the last one, but let me just check. That was the last one.
Thank you, Honorable Faba.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. You are young. I think you won't take the root of the old people. You are very young.
Thank you for saying that I'm young. I appreciate that. I always feel like that. Yes. Most probably I will be back. But let's quickly just ask, there's not a lot of questions. I like to ask what the Auditor General usually say and look at those questions. And the one is about the regulated expenditure and the fruitful and wasteful expenditure. And it's actually a very simple question. I know some of this irregular spending comes from the municipalities, I suppose, etc. But I would like to know, what is the department doing to rectify this? Because every year we see this in these reports. It's not the first year, it's not the second year. We've been here 4.5 years, and every year we see it. But every year we come here, we get the reports on annual reports, and we don't really get feedback from what has happened. How does the department rectify it? Was the action taken against municipalities, if it was money that was given to municipalities? Did someone take accountability for it? Was there processes in place to take people on that was, for instance, not working according to supply chain management, for instance? Was it people, individuals, for instance, involved in wasteful expenditure and irregular or fruitful expenditure? Because you know, sometimes it just seems to me we read this and we hear what the Auditor General says, and next year we just read it again and we say it's better than last year. But we don't know. Our scallops are about them and they get away with everything. I want to know what the department is doing, and if it's municipalities, what action was taken. We need to have, people have to take accountability because it's state money. We cannot every time sit here and say, okay, it's been less than the previous year, we're lucky. Thank you.
Yeah, let me first commend the person for the unqualified report that has been obtained. You did very well this financial year. Yeah. My first question is, under the conditional grant, particularly to Limpopo province, what I would like to know is, how is the department assisting Limpopo to avoid the recurrence of the situation in future? And under Mpumalanga, there are contractors for two projects that were terminated. Why were they terminated? And under Northwest, it's only delay that has been experienced around the construction of libraries. What caused the delay? Also, it's mentioned here the furniture that could not be procured for the year because of late awarding. What problem was the department experiencing to award it so late? My other questions, Chairperson, were also around the irregular expenditure. I have noted that most of the members asked the questions here on the intervention that has been put in place by the department to avoid such occurrences. Also on process expenditure, if the department could also take us on board all the interventions to avoid the recurrence of the situation. That will be all for me.
Thanks, Honorable Catherine. Honorable Shodi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My apologies, Chairperson, to arrive late in the meeting. I've got only two questions, Honorable Chair. The first one is the issue of delay of appointing the contract in the Free State province. Maybe one would like to know, did you put any time frame from them? Did you put any time frame for them? Because, Chairperson, I'm afraid of this issue of delay, because the money is there. Secondly, Honorable Chairperson, the issue of the people resigning within the department. What is the reason for these people resigning from the department? Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mshodi.
I think I would follow suit to what the other members have asked, especially in the case of delayed programs and projects, that if we keep on delaying this program, you know what is happening outside there. People are not saying the Department of Arts and Culture is delaying the program or the progress in our community. They usually say, this government is doing that. Do you have any provision that you have put in place for especially the recurring habit of a certain province? For example, if Eastern Cape, I'm from Eastern Cape, if Eastern Cape has got a recurring habit of delaying projects, of underspending, and yet there are a lot of things that need to be done. Do you have any provisions or anything that you are going to do or anything that you are doing in combating that? Also, Chair, you also DDJ, I'm from Jokabi region, and Jokabi is the borders of Lesotho. There's a place called Dele Bridge in Jokabi. In these projects that you have, in these heritage institutions that you have, I don't see anything about the Tele Bridge, and yet the Tele Bridge has got a heritage or has got a history in our liberation as South Africans. It has a huge history on that, which needs maybe to be researched and do something on what happened, because in my understanding and in my in what I have heard, there are people that were crossing that bridge illegally then. There are people who are being hurt there. There are things that happened in that bridge during that time of the apartheid. I think we need to reconsider that. Maybe it's in your next project. It's not in the current project. Usha person has already raised her concern about the flag of the school flag. I think you should have a time frame that says in 2014, by the end of 2014, every South African school will be having a South African flag across the country. Every school across the pink, green, white, and black schools should have, and for as long as the school is in South Africa, I think, or under your, under you, so you, that those schools should be having Ilendo, should have flags. Also, you, in your targets, the 45 targets, you say the 45% of the targets have been achieved or completed.
the on the libraries, you say 14 libraries were completed instead of the planned 15. Are you speaking of libraries across the country? Are you speaking libraries that are within a certain region or a certain province? Because if it's only 14 libraries and they completed 15, they completed 14, and that the 15th one makes maybe you to have an irregular expenditure or under expenditure or whatever in that financial year, I think you should it should be corrected so that it doesn't happen in the future. Lastly, I might forget this. We are going to have here in Cape Town Jazz Festival as usual, and we are a select committee on education, arts and culture is included. And we've been promised about the tickets, and the other people are getting it, and we're not getting it. It goes back to what Honorable Mube has said, that we are not regarded as the second House of Parliament. Could you DDG, acting DG, or Deputy Minister, let's put it on your shoulders, because we don't get these tickets. Can we get some of these tickets, please, for the 2 days of the Jazz Festival? I think that's all. And also, DDG, I just want to raise my concern. I know this might sound very unprofessional or so, but I think, DDG, you need to quite someone who minister. It's been too long that we don't see him in our committee. And we are satisfied about you. We are very much satisfied about you. But now that you are always with this select committee, you are in this report, you are put as a minister because you are always here with us. You see? Just or because it's the end of the term, and maybe we won't meet again. Just say to the minister we miss him. Thanks. DJ, over to you. I mean, acting DJ.
Sorry, Madam Chair, just for clarity. If you say you might not see him, is it because of you on the list or the minister on the list? We just want to know.
No. That will happen in the next term. I say in this term.
DDG and acting DG and the team. I'm sure some of the questions, I suspect some of the team, like Dr. Pitt, so there's going to be some which will fall on your lap.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will certainly hand over to my colleague, Dr. Cecil, for many of these. But essentially to speak on a few issues. The rabbit in the ear has been an extraordinary focus of attention, and the Minister has accepted the apology with grace. I think there is acknowledgement that this shouldn't have happened, but it did. And unfortunately will now always be part of the story that is told about this particular statute. But I think that in keeping with the principles of engaging with the sector and, of course, reconciliation, the apology has been accepted, and the rabbits will be homed elsewhere, not on the statute. And essentially, it's up to us to make sure that the statute continues to be held in that sort of aura of dignity with which it was launched. And so it is a major flagship of the department, and we will continue to talk about it in terms that are in keeping with its stature and its dignity. The rabbit will hopefully be a footnote in history, in not very long. In terms of the flags, concerns of the members here have echoed concerns raised by the minister and the deputy minister. And in essence, there is a huge focus of attention on this. One of the problems with the way that we were rolling it out previously is with an egg in one basket, is that we had one service provider. And that's proved to be unmanageable and not able to be implemented. So as a result, what we've now done is we've appointed service providers based in provinces and designated them with a specific targeted number of schools. And that we really feel that decentralization of the process, we feel, will ensure very rapid rollout of the project. And again, members, you'll forgive us, we're a slightly smaller team today than would ordinarily be the case because we're following the prescripts of the National Treasury guidelines issued based on the Minister of Finance's austerity measures. So we're a much smaller team than would ordinarily be the case. So where members have required very specific technical information, we've got a record of those questions and we will get back to you in writing with full details on some of these issues because in essence I'm concerned that between the three of us here we may not be able to answer in full or to the satisfaction of the committee, but that is our commitment. With regard to the issue of the HR report and the classifications of Asians, the committee is correct. It is an outdated classification. It should really be Indians. And as a result, it's probably a result of the template that's been issued by Treasury, but I would need to go back and check that information and get back to you. But we will certainly provide that feedback to Human Resources to make sure that we don't use outdated terminology in the report as we go forward. In essence, and again this is just a broader statement, with regard to the performance of particular provinces on community libraries, is that the Minister and the Deputy Minister appointed a special committee to really have a very good look at what was happening. And as a result of that process, a sort of a series of recommendations have been made, and we're working very differently with service providers in this respect to ensure that those communities are not unduly disenfranchised by delivery problems, perhaps in government. DM, I don't particularly want to comment on the situation in Limpopo, but obviously with the broader complexities surrounding Limpopo, doing work in the province and with government is complicated, and I'm sure the Senate committee is aware from the work that you're doing in other committees as well. We do have regular discussions at all structures, Technical Implementation Committee, which is where DG meets with head of departments, and also at MINMEC, where the Minister and the Deputy Minister meet with MEC, about these kinds of issues to make sure that they are raised at all points. With regard to the appointment of the CFO, we've had real challenges in that appointment. At the level that it is, it needs to be confirmed by Cabinet. A candidate was identified and confirmed by Cabinet, but unfortunately is not available to take up the post. So at this point, it is a very challenging circumstance. Having said that, recruiting CFOs in the government environment is not an easy thing. It is a scarce skill. And so it is something that we will concentrate on. We are aware of the issues. But having said that, the department has advertised the process, gone through the process, and we are now in the process of reconsidering that. There was a question asked about appointments at DDG level. I was essentially the one appointment at DDG level. And subsequently, another appointment has been made this year. But of course, we also lost our Chief Operating Officer, Ms. Melissa Beduza, as she was appointed to DG of the Department of Women and Children. So we're on a bit of a treadmill at the moment. We're running and running and running, but we're not really moving anywhere. But certainly our HR department is aware that we've made some appointments in that were pending from last financial year and this financial year that will change the picture. But again, committee members are correct. It's something that needs to be watched. It's something that needs to be monitored, and it is something being taken very seriously by the department. Sakil, I'm not sure if you want to come in and answer some of the direct questions, and then between you and I, we can fill in some of the gaps.
Thank thank DG. Sorry. I think the DG has actually spoken to the flags issue. I think we've taken recently quite drastic measures to try and sort of correct the situation that we've been confronted with over the years. The decentralization being one of them, but I think we've also taken a position to fast track the process to make sure that by December, at least next year, 2014, I think it's a commitment that we've made it by the department that we should have flags in each and every school. So we will have to redirect some resources towards that, but there is an intervention that is being put in place to make sure that we correct that. Hard copies of the annual report. The DG has spoken to the austerity measures that have been introduced by National Treasury, which basically begins to restrict us on the number of annual reports that can be printed at any point in time. We've made available to Parliament the number of copies that are prescribed for each department, and then also we did make available to Parliament a copy of the CD for the annual report. So that if then copies need to be made in Parliament, those copies are made. We apologize for that, but we did actually provide the annual reports to Parliament, but I think we will make sure that we keep some copies in the department just in case they are not distributed to all the committees. And next year we will make sure that we provide those annual reports in hard copies. I think the question also was raised around some kind of monitoring and evaluation that should be taking place on a regular basis in the department to raise red flags, and that we should not only be surprised at the end of the financial year. Just to give comfort to you, the honourable members, we do have sort of structures within the department that actually follow up on areas of underperformance, or we review our performance on a regular basis, quarterly basis, and as when the need arises, where we find that there are areas of underperformance. And then we also have a quite an elaborate sort of and comprehensive reporting tool where we actually, where there are areas of underperformance, we then indicate what corrective measures, and we actually follow up on those areas on a more regular basis, like on a monthly basis. We do track those and we do report on them. But, you know, in some instances, you know, we are unable to actually complete certain undertakings because of other issues that are beyond our control. I think the Honourable Member from the Northern Cape raised a very, very important thing that we need to note as a committee, the issue of dependencies. You know, some of the projects that we're doing with DPW and other sort of partners and all of that, that is basically is an issue of dependency, which in some instances is outside our control. And I think it's a point well taken, and it's something that we need to incorporate in our planning and see how we can actually overcome that situation. The ferry at Robben Island, the breakdowns, I think there was an article or an article or a letter that was actually generated by one member of parliament raising the issues around the ferry breakdowns in Robben Island. And I think the CEO of Robben Island has actually written a response to that, where he actually begins to highlight what are the key problems confronting the ferry management at Robben Island, and what is it that they are doing to actually remedy that situation. If please be, I can provide that response letter to the committee so that they can have a copy where the CEO is actually giving a more comprehensive report and a response to the challenges and the issues that were raised by Parliament. So we can make that letter and the response available to the committee. And then I think also with I want to speak to the conditional grant and the assistance that is provided to the provinces. I think the DDG has spoken to that, but it's just to emphasize that we are actually putting in measures to try and assist provinces through the number of structures that we have,
we have MINEC, where the minister meets with the MSC of provinces. We highlight what the challenges are and what is it that needs to be done to remedy those challenges that we're confronted with. We have the DG meeting with the HODs of respective provinces. We have also a committee structure now that has been established in the department to then sort of facilitate and help up with the technical support, provide that technical support to our provinces. So we do have measures in place that we put in place to make sure that we try and improve on certain areas of underperformance or where we have problems or challenges. If you may allow me, DM, I'm going to pose a question again, which again we need to also look when we assessing the department's performance, especially in issues of unauthorized expenditure. Here is the situation that we are confronted as government in most instances, and especially the officials that are working. You have a disaster happening. I'm using an example, just an example. You have a disaster confronting Gauteng province, for example. It might be floods, whatever the situation may be. And that disaster happens somewhere in February, end of February. You don't have the luxury of time to first run to Treasury and say, Treasury, can we redirect those funds? Because those funds are needed urgently. And as such, in some instances as a department, we need to act to save lives. And basically that money, that's what we did not foresee that happening, and as such we have to shift money from. We do write to Treasury to alert them that we've made that, but then we have AG that says that this is unauthorized expenditure. So we do have situations like that. Not to say that we are actually trying to say that there are instances of unauthorized expenditure, but I just want the committee to understand in some instances what we are confronted with as people who are actually providing services on the ground. So it is not an excuse. I'm not saying it is an excuse, but I'm just saying that there are such instances that we need to be aware of. Thank you, DG.
Honorable Fab, do you have a follow-up question on what has been said now?
Yes, Honorable Chair. I thought we are in the Committee of Arts and Culture, not Disaster Management.
I think we should say that we do need, I think the numbers are correct in terms of raising the issue. And I think maybe as the acting DG has indicated, we may not have all the facts, the detail, because interventions have been taken in terms of addressing, because it is a legal obligation on the management. Once you have the audit report, the management letters, and the internal audit, the external audit, and finally the observations of the Auditor General, we are obliged to make sure that the matters which have been picked up are addressed. We may not have the details now, as the ATMCG has indicated, but I think it's a matter which we should be able to come back in writing at the acting DG, between yourself, the DG, and the acting CFO, to actually indicate, because I think the members are entitled to a response, to say there are still areas, even though when you look at the report, quite a number of those come from earlier years. So I would disagree with the Honorable Desilius that actually we're getting worse. Because if you look at the report, does indicate the years, the carryover of 2010, 2011, 2012, there are still some matters which are relating to the actual year of the audit, 2012, 2013. There are still some matters which the AGS indicated, but if you look at it actually, you will find that some of those, there were very specific situations
and they have also been condoned by Treasury, because once you then explain and satisfactory, those then are taken out because they've been condoned. So, but I think we need to, from the team, on that area, because we're dealing with public money. So I think we do need to quite specifically just come back with a written response which indicates that in the area of unauthorized expenditure, these are the measures specifically which have been taken in terms of the current, to make sure that it's not recurring. In the area of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as indicated by the internal audit, external audit, and finally, Auditor General, these are the specific steps which have been taken, and therefore, going forward, will curtail. It may not totally, we would want to totally eradicate, hopefully, to the satisfaction of the committee. I think while generally, I think some of the comments are correct, but I think the members are entitled to a very specific response, and we should come back with that kind of a response. Just to add, try to say on the acting DG commented, the issue of the CFO has been really a headache. I mean, it's a lengthy process. Once you advertise, shortlist, interview, competency tests, what do you call this, screening by NIA, vetting. Now, we went through that process. After all that, submitted to cabinet, cabinet approved, candidates at that time declined. Because where the candidate came from by then, well, it was a bit of a tricky situation because unknowingly, well, I think he might have contributed. In the panel, we also had somebody from the department to where the person came from, the preferred candidate. And it was clear that the person from that department was not happy to lose the candidate who became our preferred candidate. So I suspect that played a role, because then that candidate was made a counter offer from the department where they came from. And after all this process, we were then informed that the candidate is now declining because the department where she came from has improved on their package on the same candidate. So we are now in the situation where we are weighing in, possibly looking at the second preference, because it was at least that one has been interviewed. It's one of the options we are looking at, because starting the process again, advertising or headhunting again, may take another year. So if we are agreed on and that second candidate, if he is still interested, we may be able to solve the problem. I thought I should just add on this one. I think there are some other areas which are more specific. I won't comment about the tickets. I'm not in charge of the tickets. The people who know who controls the tickets. But there are also some very specific matters of members about, for instance, the late appointment of contractor in the first stage. I think some of those the team will have to look at. But just to say that, especially with the library and other projects, it's easier on the projects which are capital projects where we are directly in charge, like our institutions, even though they may be placed in different provinces. But if they are our institutions, we still depend on other departments like DPW, but we are navigating through that because we are working through trying to shorten some of the processes and also working through other external agents. That's why you would find that there is a fair improvement on those capital projects where we are directly in charge of the institutions. If you look at it compared to the previous years, there is less under expenditure on those institutions where we are directly in charge. But when it comes to the conditional grants, we can only, you know, assist in terms of where we identify the weaknesses, as the team has mentioned. We have also added capacity in the department, but ultimately
we depend on the good cooperation of the province and the municipality through which they deliver that infrastructure. So you therefore find that generally, when there is instability in a province and a particular municipality where the project is being implemented, it affects the delivery. And we can try our best in terms of, you know, assisting where there is a blockage, but it ultimately depends also on the particular province, and especially, you know, and then it may sometimes, because some of the things are also local. So we are doing our best in terms of making sure that the issue of, just to speak about some matters which were also raised, the question of the Mbizos, I think the chair of the committee had raised that. It is a difficult matter because I think it is a balance that we need to, on the one hand, continue with areas where, you know, when either through initiative from stakeholders, when they identify particular needs and where there's possibility of us supporting them to deliver on certain requests, we need to improve on that. But I think the question of public engagement, with all its shortcomings, we must improve in terms of costs and follow up, because it is this thing of public consultation is very useful, because you know when you are there and ordinary people in the areas raise issues which on your reports they may be showing done,
yeah.
But when you are there, you know, and people raise issues and tell you very practical frustrations and so on, it does help in terms of sensitizing us of some of the things which you may take for granted. So, but I think maybe what we should improve on is also follow up, because there's no use as well, like any other, you know, consultation process. There's no use if people raise issues and we don't take proper records and actually make sure that they are followed up. So, yeah, no, thanks, let me stop there.
Thank you, DM. Honorable Faba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to thank the Deputy Minister for answering my quite bit maybe front forward question indirectly. Thank you, Minister, and I'm sure you will be back.
Okay. Do we still have outstanding questions that are not answered? Remember, we don't have. Acting DG, do you want to say something?
Just to say, Chairperson, that there were some questions about community libraries, specific questions, which we can follow up, but if the committee is happy, then that's fine. But I think DM's made the commitment to say that we will follow up on the specific interventions taken with regard to preventing unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So you will see that correspondence from us as soon as possible.
Thank you, this takes us to the end of our meeting. Let me thank the department for the information that we got, and also thank the department. In your presentation, you have pointed out issues from provinces. We are a select committee from the NCOP and we are representing provinces. You could hear from our questions that we were asking specific questions from our provinces. I thank you for the department to realizing or to have taken note of our concern as this select committee. Let me also thank the department on adhering on the Minister of Finance issues that he raised. You immediately acted quickly on some of the things that the minister has raised. Let me thank you for that, because some other people would say, no, he has just said it on the 5th of December, so we can't implement it on the 5th of January. It has to take longer because people are not people need to be adjusted to what is, to the new conditions now. But thank you very much. Thank you, members, for attending, and the staff members that were. Thank you very much. Members, we are not down. We are going to adopt the program. We've got number 7. You can look at your agenda. The agenda is not done yet. The consideration of committee's first term program and the issue of yesterday that we need to take care of. Thank you. Okay, you are dismissed immediately. Thank you, honorable members. Let us first look at the draft system program of higher of you of the Select Committee on Education. Do it. I will have a comfort break. That is very long. That is very long comfort break. Do we start with the issue of yesterday, or do we go straight to the program of the of Elendo? I did not send the program here, social services, because I would compare the two programs. If there is a new one, let's check if there is any. But let's continue with the one year education. There is Wednesday today, ne? We got the briefing. On the 5th February, the annual report briefing by the sports and recreation. This is the briefing address. 19th briefing by the Department of Basic Education and Umalusi on the 2013 grade 12 results. On the 26th,